Welcome back to The Wise Man's Page, the podcast where we read Patrick Rothfuss's The Wise Man's Fear, page by page. This is page 273. Simon tried to sit up and calm me, but the sudden motion was too much for him, and he fell awkwardly onto his side and began to laugh helplessly. "This isn't funny," I shouted. "It's at the Aeolian," Willem said. "You've asked about it 4 times since we left." "No, I haven't," I said with more conviction than I really felt. I rubbed my head where I'd knocked it against the gray stone. "There is no reason to be ashamed," Willem waved a hand dismissively. "It is man's nature to dwell on what sits close to his heart. I heard Kilvin got a few in him at the taps a couple months ago and wouldn't shut up about his new cold surf lamp," Simon said. Will snorted. Lauren would rattle on about proper shelving behavior. "Grasp by the spine, grasp by the spine," he growled and made clutching motions with both hands. "If I hear him say it again, I will grasp his spine." A flash of memory came to me. "Merciful Tailu," I said, suddenly aghast. "Did I sing Tinker Tanner at the Aeolian tonight?" "You did," Simon said. "I didn't know it had so many verses." I wrinkled my forehead, trying desperately to remember. "Did I sing the verse about the Telen and the sheep?" It was not a good verse for polite company. "Nya," Willem said. "Thank God," I said. "It was a goat," Willem managed seriously before he bubbled up into laughter. "In the Telen's cassock," Simon sang, then joined Willem in laughter. "No, no," I said miserably, resting my head in my hands. "My mother used to make my dad sleep under the wagon when he sang that in public. Stanchion will beat me with a stick and take away my pipes next time I see him." "They loved it," Simon reassured me. "I saw Stanchion singing along," Willem added. His nose was a little red by that time, too. There was a long piece of comfortable quiet. "Quoth?" Simon asked. "Yes." "Are you really Edmure?" The question caught me unprepared. Normally, it would have set me on edge, but at the moment, I didn't know how I felt about it. "Does it matter?" "No, I was just wondering." "Oh." I continued to watch the stars for a while. "Wondering what?" And that's the page.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jordana.
First things first, the sulfur lamp is a real thing. It's a fairly modern invention, actually. And it looks like it's actually more promising than a lot of contemporary lights and safer for the environment, too.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know necessarily if it's the same technology that Kilvin has discovered here on this page, but it is a real thing.
The comedy continues on this page. Will doing his best Lauren impression is really funny. If I hear it again, I'll grasp his spine. Makes me laugh. And then...
Yes, that's the kind of joke we would make about Jordana.
Hey, you will most certainly not.
And then also, like, Foth realizing, when you're starting to sober up and you, like, start to remember things you did, and you're like, oh my god, did I really sing that really filthy song? And his friends have some fun with him about it, like, no, you sang this verse.
But... this opens the door to something interesting. You can really follow the thread of conversation and why it leads where it leads. Because Quoth makes mention that his mother made his father sleep under the wagon. And Simon notices. It seems like Simon and Will have never actually asked him about his heritage before. I'm sure they have suspected such things. And I know that they know that he is secretive. But because of this line about the sleeping under the wagon, and because they're probably a little bit drunk, Sim feels safe enough to finally say, "Hey, are you really Edamura?" And then we talk about this more on the next page. They get deeper into it. Because Quoth is a little bit drunk and also is safe for maybe the first time in ages, he doesn't bite Simon's head off or get defensive or otherwise be unwilling to entertain this. He's finally at a place where he can talk to his friends about this thing that he's kept very close to his chest all this
time.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was sober, if he would have reacted the same way.
I wonder. He does say, normally it would have set me on edge, but at the moment I didn't know how to feel about it.
But it's unclear if the reason that at the moment is because he's relaxed or because, like, he's drunk or...
Can't it be both?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's relaxed because he's drunk. And also because he's, like, with his friends who he likes. But I also think that he wouldn't have ever said, my dad used to make my mom sleep under the wagon if he wasn't drunk and relaxed, right? He never would have opened this door. And this leads me to, like, kind of an interesting thought, which is that one of the things that we talked about when I was in school for writing a long time ago is that having characters get drunk and then spill all their secrets is almost like a cliche at this point, because like it's based in truth. Like when you're drunk, your guard is down, you're less defensive, you're less circumspect, and you're more likely to talk about things that you might not otherwise talk about or be more honest about your feelings. When that's deployed by a lazy writer or deployed in a lazy fashion, it does feel kind of cheap. Like, okay, I need this character to talk about this thing to move the plot forward now, so they're going to have to get drunk so that they can do that. And this does not feel that way to me. And I think it's because Rothfuss has done such a good job delineating who these characters are and their relationships, and having it happen like almost 1,000 pages into the two books and having it used to reveal character rather than advance the plot, I think makes it a lot, like makes it fine.
Yeah, it's also not being overused, which I think is important.
Yeah, exactly. If they got drunk like every three chapters and revealed a new and exciting personal secret, it would get old pretty fast. And this also feels honest to me in that, yeah, sometimes you do like have intense personal conversations with your friends at 3 a.m. after you've been out at the bar all night.
Yes. I mean, not in years, but yes.
Well, it's a lot more common when you can afford to be out at, you know, out until 3 a.m. because you're like 21.
So is the reason Quoth has money now to spend on not Soundton because he stole Ambrose's purse?
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
Okay. Because it kind of feels like he has more money and I don't know why.
I think that's why. And also he's out to celebrate, so he's not really thinking about money right now.
Very well.
Yeah, and also we know that people at the bar were buying him drinks.
That's true too.
Right, but normally, instead of having them buy him drinks, he would go for the Soundton.
Right, but he's out to celebrate.
Right. Okay. So because he's out to celebrate, not doing Soundton. Got it.
Is there anything else we want to talk about on this page?
We just have a short letter. This is from SNC, who writes on page 229. Hello, Pagers. I think you all were ignoring something kind of obvious about why Quoth doesn't use his knowledge of stories to realize what Elladin is doing, which is that the last time he thought Elladin was a wise master out of a story, he ended up leaping off a roof due to that belief. From that incident, we see that from the stories, Quoth knows the plucky young hero proves his worth to the wise master by demonstrating his cleverness. However, Elladin is not really interested in how clever Quoth is, and so that knowledge doesn't actually help him. Thanks for the podcast, and hope you're all doing well during this difficult time. Best regards, SNC.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess there's not much else to do other than to agree with it.
That seems reasonable. I do want to quickly jump back to the page because there's a cool language cognate that I wanted to bring up, which is that the Shaldish word for no is nia. In the real world, across languages and languages that have like no root linguistic connection, we still end up using the same kinds of sounds to mean the same kinds of things. There is a word in, I think, Mandarin that is ma, or some pronunciation of ma, that means mother, just like we would say ma or mom.
Well, as I understand it, in almost every language, the ma syllable is reflective of the mother, because that's one of the first things a baby is able to say.
Like, it's one of the first sounds a baby's mouth can make?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the first sounds they're able to make. So it's not just Mandarin, it's almost every language.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of what I mean. I think no is another one.
In Hindi, I'm hearing from a firsthand source that it's also in Hindi.
There you go. And I feel like no is another one of those things.
What's no in Hindi? Na.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in Hindi it's na.
In Russian it's niet. In German it's nine. And we will be language cognates on tomorrow's page.
The Wind!